You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when Tinkerbell rings her little bells like this. Let's begin now.
This is The History of Comics, The Short Runs, and I'm Dan Oakes. This is Season 1, Episode 1, The Human Fly. Thanks for joining me today. As I said before, my name's Dan, and I'm a comic book collector from St. Louis, Missouri. The purpose of this podcast is to gather various information on short comic series that are not necessarily obscure, but rather series that don't get a lot of attention. So I try to find those shortened series, the ones that have less than 50 issues, more than one issue sometimes, that have come and gone through the years. The intention is to highlight some of those things that you might find interesting. The hope is that this will help narrow down some books for you to track down, to read, or to simply avoid. I'll also be looking through different comic book history collections, collected editions, and other related items to help fill in those gaps. So the series today is called The Human Fly, and this was published in 1977 by Marvel Comics. So who are we talking about today? The Human Fly. And this is the Human Fly that is specific to the 1977 comic series. In Marvel history, there are actually two other Human Fly characters, but we're not going to go into them. This one is specific to the 1977 series and is actually based off a real-life person. The Human Fly was a Canadian stuntman who was trying to get attention in the 70s and was kind of following the same path as Evel Knievel, doing a wide range of different types of stunts, but there are only two actual stunts that the Human Fly is documented having done. And the first one was riding on the back of, or on the top of a 747, which he had to do twice. And then the second stunt was trying to jump over 26 buses, which was the record set by Evel Knievel. And he did jump over 26 buses, but he crashed at the end, so he didn't quite pull off the stunt. And then after that, he disappeared. There's a great video by a person named Strange Brain Parts that I encourage you to watch if you have any interest in the real Human Fly, and you can find that on YouTube. The guy does a great deep dive into who the real Human Fly is. So the character of the Human Fly is a Canadian male superhero. He's dressed in a red bodysuit with white markings and stripes. His face is covered, and he wears a shorter cape of the same colors and often carries a short cane that sometimes is used and sometimes is not used. Sometimes you'll see it as the top comes off and it has a wire attached to it that he can latch things onto. But it's really not anything from a power stance or any type of mechanical device that does a lot of things. He has no superpowers, but his origin story, and this also is reflected in the real-life Human Torch, claims that he was in a car wreck and his body was destroyed, and the doctors put him back together with steel plates and reinforcements. Not quite as $6 million man type, but more like a low-rent Wolverine, where his bones and everything are laced with steel. He has no superpowers, but he is athletic and he's able to do a wide range of martial arts and fighting and flipping and using his body in ways that your average human cannot do because he's worked so hard at rebuilding his body. That's one of the big themes that you see in and out of this comic book, is that if you just put your mind to it, you can overcome these physical disabilities. So the Human Fly has a supporting cast and essentially a team that helps the Human Fly pull off all these stunts. He does not have a sidekick, which is interesting because in real life, he did have a sidekick and that person's name was Mercury, but that person never makes it into the comic books. So his support team is a black female named Laze Kendall, who is a pilot, and she flies the team and drives the team wherever they need to go. Then you have Ted Locke, who's a mechanic and engineer, and he has no hands. He's a Vietnam vet, and when he was in Vietnam, his hands were blown off in a battle sequence, which they make a flashback to. And then the last person is Arnie Berman, and he doesn't show up until issue 2, and he remains unnamed until issue 4. And then the last person on the team is Harmony White, and she is a reporter that has been assigned to expose the human fly as a fake. She comes around to be a part of the human fly team after she realizes how great a person he is. And at the end of issue 12, she has this long conversation throughout the issue with Arnie. And the manager basically says, hey, this is how I came to work with the human fly. And that story convinces Harmony White of how good the human fly is and that she wants to be a part of his team and help him carry his message. So where did I first come across the human fly? So I grew up in the 1970s, was born in 73, and so I first started collecting comics in 1983, so I was 10 years old, and my brother and I had gotten a comic collection from our cousin. During that time, Sears or JCPenney's would have these Christmas catalogs that they would send out, and one of them had, and maybe both of them did, a starter comic book collection kit. So once having gotten our cousin's collection, I kind of dove right in. And then for Christmas one year, I asked for this comic book collector's kit. And it was a kit that came with about 10 to 20 comics. I don't remember exactly how many. But it also came with plastic covers, and it came with a cardboard box. And the cardboard box kind of had generic comic panels and figures on the outside and said comic collection. And it was somewhere between the size of a traditional short box and a long box. So I would say it probably held, 150 comics or 100 comics. So within that first 10 to 20 comic books that came with that collector kit, I received issue 18 of The Human Fly. Now, in my cousin's collection, there was a lot of Flash, a lot of Justice League, a lot of kind of mainstream DC and Marvel stuff. I had no clue who the human fly was. So when I received this issue, it was kind of interesting because I didn't know who the character was. It's probably my favorite cover out of the whole series of the human fly. And on the cover, it's got a picture of the human fly holding an elderly person in his arms. And it looks like a bunch of people shouting at him. And it says, "A Gathering of Vultures." And the cover price was 35 cents. So the basic information regarding this series, and this is according to my CLZ app, which is an app for comic collections. The first issue of The Human Fly was released in September of 1977. This release time is considered to be in the Bronze Age of comics, which the Bronze Age goes from 1970 to 1983. And the Bronze Age is described as more attention to realism. The first issue of Conan the Barbarian through Marvel Comics, issue 1, came out in 1970. We also have things like Tomb of Dracula that came out in 1972. DC had the Green Lantern, issue 85, which was the anti-drug issue. And then this is also a period of time when the Comics Code Authority is starting to loosen up. That's really kind of the Bronze Age for comic books. There are 19 issues in this series, and they went monthly, starting in September of 77, all the way through to the end of the 19th issue. I have a feeling that the series was canceled very kind of short notice, because at the end of issue 19, there was a contest that they had started in issue 15 for fans who could write in and talk about some kind of stunt that the human fly could do in the comic book. And then in issue 19, they essentially say, Sorry, the issue, the series is going to end. These were the five winners. Unfortunately, there's really not much we can do about it, and your stories and suggestions will not come into the comic, but we thought we would list your names here. So who are the artists and writers for this series? So Bill Mantlo is the writer for all 19 issues. It did not have a creative team that was consistent throughout all of the 19 issues. It seemed to have bounced around. There's actually Lee Elias, Carmen Infantino, who's did a lot of Flash work, Frank Robbins, and Bob Lubbers are all the artists that kind of rotate in and out. Lee and Frank having the most issues between them in terms of the art. Inkers and colorists, at one point they actually had a name called I Want to Be as the colorist, which I thought was kind of funny. But Don Perlin, Mary Titus, a few others were inkers. In terms of letterers, Joe Rosen, and then also I Want to Be, and Bruce Patterson. It was not uncommon for Marvel to put fake names into some of those attributes for who was doing what within the comics. So that's why you'll see names like I Want to Be. In terms of the type of paper and comic that this is, so the cover price was 30 cents. That's for the first issue. And then by issue 19, it has gone up to 35 cents. It is the typical newsprint paper from the 1970s. The colors, you know, pretty bright and vivid all across the board, but not quite up to what modern comics are. It has Human Fly pretty much on every cover. And each cover kind of hints at what's in the story inside, but isn't an exact summation of the story. I found it really hard to find who had done the covers for each of the comics. That information was not available. And then again, in terms of issues, it was 19 issues in total, starting in September of 77 and ending in March of 1979. In terms of each individual issues, so here are some things, related character tie-ins. So Peter Parker and Spider-Man make an appearance in the first issue. Peter makes an appearance as a reporter and works with the Human Fly to save a plane load of passengers from a group of hijackers. Peter Parker references another Human Fly that he had a run with and conveniently tells the reader that these are different characters. The bad guy Human Fly that Peter references was in Amazing Spider-Man Annual 10 from January 1976. And then in issue 2, the Human Fly has appearances with Ghost Rider / Johnny Blaze, and it's basically a motorcycle-based stunt. Each of the comics, oh, and there's one other appearance too that I think is of note. In issue 8 and 9, which is a two-part story, there is an appearance of the White Tiger, and he has a reference to Spectacular Spider-Man 9 and 10. He was a Spider-Man foe. And then Copperhead is the villain in these two issues, and there's also a reference of him in Daredevil 125. In issue 9, which is the second part of the story, again, the White Tiger makes an appearance, so does Copperhead, but also Daredevil. And so those are really kind of the key issues in terms of characters that make spotlights in the 19 issues. Other than that, it's really strictly the Human Fly and his cast of characters. Each issue of The Human Fly has a basic sequence. It essentially starts off with some kind of stunt that is going to occur, and The Human Fly is doing these unique and different stunts that are just amazing people wherever he goes. Any of the proceeds that he makes from this stunt goes to some type of children's advocacy agency or something for individuals with disabilities, Vietnam vets. There's always some group that he's not making a profit from that he's turning this money over to these groups. That is essentially kind of the sequence of almost all of the stories. There's also something interesting in the sense that each issue takes place in a different location throughout the United States and Canada. So in issue 1, he makes his appearance in Houston, Texas, and that's the one with the plane where he rides on top of it. In issue 2, there's a stunt in Nevada. In issue 3, the location is Colorado Springs, Colorado, where he climbs a mountain. And that's a two-part story for issues 3 and 4. In issue 5, there's a stunt in Quebec, Canada, where he's walking a tightrope between two buildings. In issue 6, he is at a Funland amusement park. I couldn't quite discern where the location of that was, because there were several Funland amusement parks in the United States in the 1970s. In issue 7, he's at a winter festival in Vermont. In issue 8, he's in New York City at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where someone is trying to steal an item from the art museum, which is this large urn. And those are the issues with Copperhead and White Tiger. In issue 9, that is the part 2 of the Copperhead and White Tiger story. In issue 10, he's in Harlan County, Kentucky, and he's doing a skydiving stunt and basically finds out that this mining company is trying to shut down one of their mines and hurt their miners, and so the miner union gets involved. In issue 11, it occurs in Montreal, Canada. This is the issue that there's a flashback to the stunt where the human fly in real life jumped over the row of 26 buses and crashes, but it's a short flashback. The rest of the issue actually takes place, and this is my favorite part, takes place in St. Louis, Missouri. The stunt that he does in St. Louis is that he will ride his motorcycle up and over the Gateway Arch. They don't quite show him doing the stunt, because if you've ever been to St. Louis, you realize that it is impossible to ride a motorcycle over the arch in St. Louis. There's also a part in the story where there's a band playing underneath the arch as part of some kind of festival, which does sometimes happen in St. Louis, particularly in the 70s. They would have what would be called the VP Fair, and there'd be a lot of bands and things playing under the arch. So this isn't exactly a stretch. I just love it because St. Louis doesn't get mentioned too often in comic books. In issue 12, it takes place in some desert location, it doesn't specify, and there's a railroad company that's involved. The stunt that he does is he uses some kind of rocket-powered chair on railroad tracks, and the goal is to escape before the chair before it actually hits a concrete target. What's interesting about this issue is that this becomes the origin of Arnie the manager. And it's also the issue where Harmony White decides to quit her job as a reporter and begin to work with the human fly because Arnie's story is so powerful. In issue 13, it takes place in Mount Whitney, California. The stunt is to be the first man to ski America's tallest mountain. In issue 14, it takes place along the Hudson River in New York. The stunt is to walk on a tight wire between two hot air balloons. There's this cross story where these two children that live in foster care sneak onto one of the balloons, and human fly is able to save them and reunite them with long-lost family members. In issue 15, it takes place in the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C. This story is essentially about two Vietnam vets that take over the Washington Monument to try and blow it up, and Ted, who is a Vietnam vet himself, is friends with one of these individuals, and of course, the human fly comes and saves the day. But the issue really highlights some of the medical needs that weren't being met by some of the hospitals for Vietnam vets at that time. Issue 16 takes place at Niagara Falls, and this is a stunt that involves water skiing over the falls, and then some weird sequence of events. A child with a wheelchair gets caught during the act and is pulled into the water, and the human fly saves them. In issue 17, this takes place in the Union State Fair in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and the stunt for this particular issue is that he gets blasted out of a cannon, and someone steals a girl's camera who happened to be taking pictures of the human fly, and on the roll of film, the human fly notices the individual who is trying to sabotage the cannon to kill him. And then we have the last two issues, issue 18 and 19. They take place on a Native American reservation in Las Cruces, New Mexico. It's a bit of a convoluted story, but essentially he got hired by a local gang to come and do a stunt. He didn't realize that it was a local gang that was trying to just make money and keep the Native Americans suppressed on the reservation. At the end of that issue, that's when we all realize that the series is ending. What's interesting for me is that on my issue, and I don't know if this was across the board, there's a printing error, and so the colors are off. So the human fly on a couple pages is not in a red costume, but rather a green costume. And all of the faces of the folks in different pages are blue tinted as opposed to skin tones. So I'm not sure if that's just something specific to me or not. And again, at the last issue, the Marvel bullpen announces that this is the last issue of The Human Fly. So two questions come to mind. The first is this worth reading? And the second is this worth collecting? And I want to switch those around a little bit. In terms of reading it, it is prime 1970s Marvel. If that is something that you enjoy, then this series doesn't disappoint because it follows a lot of standard one-issue, small arc kind of stories that Marvel was known for at the time. The art is pretty good in a couple issues, particularly when Frank Robbins is doing it. I really enjoy his work. The other is if you enjoy Bill Mantlo as a writer, and again, he did a lot of series like ROM and a few others, it's worth checking out because it is a different series than what really was out there in terms of characters at the time. In terms of people that might want to collect these issues, according to my CLZ app, the first issue is considered a minor key. So Human Fly number one, minor key. In other issues, if you are a Peter Parker Spider-Man completist and you're looking for all those appearances in other comics, then you might want to check out the first issue as well. If you are a Daredevil completist, then I suggest that you check out the issue that has him, which is issue 9. If you were a White Tiger fan and you want to get all those rare appearances of the White Tiger, then definitely issues 8 and 9 are part of that storyline. Or if you're a Ghost Rider Johnny Blaze fan and you're looking for appearances outside of the main title, issue 2 has those folks in that. Other than that, is it worth it? It's kind of up to you. If you're looking for something different and you're going to see that formula be used again and again, then go for it. For those folks that like faster-paced comics and a little bit more action, this may not be something that you're looking for. So where can I read this comic? Unfortunately, and this is me guessing, is I'm thinking that due to copyright issues or licenses, that there really are not going to be any reprints or digital versions of this. It is not on Marvel Unlimited as of 2024. I have not seen any of the issues collected in a trade. I have not seen it listed in any of the other sites like Comixology that sometimes has what the main comic apps don't have. So it's kind of hard to find in those traditional digital ways. What I do know is that every time I go to a comic book store that has a decent back issue, and particularly a dollar bin or a $2 bin, I find issues of The Human Fly. Now, when I started collecting the whole series and knew that I wanted to complete it in the physical issues, it took a long time. It took probably 2 years of going to comic shows and dollar bins and looking for issues. I still, to this day, when I go and look at dollar bins in different comic stores, for every box of comics that I go through, it probably takes 2 or 3 boxes for me to find an issue of The Human Fly. I did go to mycomicshop.com. That's where I bought the first issue and a handful of other issues that I could not find out into the wild. But if you're going to collect this, it should be cheap. It may be a little bit on the hard to find side, particularly if you're looking out into comic shops and conventions, unless there's some great comic shop owner that has done all the work for you and sells it as a package. It may be worth buying in all 19 issues combined. But other than that, personally, I think there are some pluses here. There are a few issues that have me chuckling. The artwork, again, by Frank Robbins on a couple issues is really good. And if you're looking for a few kind of minor key issues with The Human Fly and its uniqueness in the Marvel Universe, I would say this is a series worth looking into. So thank you for taking the time to listen through this podcast today. Next up in the podcast series for season 1 is going to be a special on the Marvel character Black Goliath.